The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, it is, and it's a Thursday. Welcome to it. And it's not just a Thursday. Or Friday Eve, as I like to call it these days. But I've got some good news to share with you to kick things off. And that's, you know, an important thing because right now there's a lot of bad news, right? So any excuse I have to share good news is worthy. Now, you heard the little the feedback there. I need to make sure that all my tabs are muted. So that hopefully, there, it's gone. All right, so now I can play something off of this computer. Because, yeah. Anyway, so I said I'm going to start with good news today. I even have the special good news sounder ready to go.
Tell me something good.
Good news blowing in your window.
Good
news is knocking on your door.
All right, ready for some good news? It's been a 5-year process to get to this point. And I'm actually not quite there yet, but 5 years ago, you know, because I've talked about it, I was diagnosed with lung cancer. 5 years ago, in 11 days, on August 30th, I had surgery that removed 2 separate and distinct instances of lung cancer, 2 different tumors from my left lung, one in the lower lobe, one in the upper lobe. They took out the entire lower lobe and did what's called a wedge resection of the upper lobe. And since then, I've been going for CAT scans at regular intervals. For the first couple of years, it was quarterly. It was 4 times a year. Then the next year, they knocked it down to 3 times a year. And for the last year or year and a half, it's been every 6 months. Well, I had my last scan on, when was it, Tuesday. And this morning I had the consult with the doctor. Now, I want to tell you what they told me we were talking about the surgery. I got lucky because we caught my cancer really early. So all I needed was the surgery. It was my choice if I wanted chemo. Do you want chemo? No. So I didn't have chemo. I didn't have radiation. I just had major surgery where they took out half my lung. Anyway, what they said is the way it works is you come in for regular scans. We check you. If you get through 5 years with all clean scans and no recurrence of the cancer, then and only then do we consider you cured. Get that, cured. So this morning we talked to my doctor, Dr. Mudad, and he says, scans are clean. I got nothing to say. And so David's like, I want to hear you say it. You got to say it. You got to say it. He said, you're cured. You're cured. I'm cured. I no longer have lung cancer. Yes, I'm cancer-free and I've been cancer-free. You know, it'll be 5 years on August 30th. But now I'm considered cured. So yes, there is a cure for cancer. I guess it depends on the kind of cancer and when they catch it and all that, but I'm cured. I played part of the show a month or so ago when it was the 5-year anniversary of when I was diagnosed. And I found out just, you know, moments before coming on the air one day. And if you've listened to the show for any amount of time, you know, I'm nothing if not honest with you guys. I share everything, virtually everything. And so you saw my reaction. You heard my reaction when I had to share with you the news that I had lung cancer. I mean, the last thing I ever expected. And in case you're wondering, yes, I used to smoke when I was younger. I started smoking very young as a kid, like 13 or 14, because we thought we were cool. But I quit. I quit when I was, I don't know, I want to say at the oldest 30. So I had not smoked in, 25 years at the time I was diagnosed. And so I was considered a non-smoker because it had been so long since I smoked cigarettes. But it doesn't matter. Anybody can get lung cancer. So here's my public service for you. If you ever smoked, get screened. You know, the way we found it in me was, and sorry if you've heard this already, but yeah, I'm excited. I had a particularly bad day at work. Stop me if you've heard this story before. And when I left there, I felt so shitty. By the time I got home, I thought I was having a heart attack. And I laid down and I thought, it'll pass. Let me just, you know, chill out and unwind and de-stress. And I woke up and I was drenched in sweat. Really, we thought I was having a heart attack. So we went to the hospital. And, they did, you know, they did all kinds of tests. One of the tests was a chest x-ray. So they want to see your heart to see, I guess, if it's swollen. Apparently it wasn't. The fact that they saw a mass on my lung, you would think would have made them say, your heart seems to be fine, but there's a mass on your lung. They never told me that. In fact, I was transferred to another hospital for them to do the angiogram, you know, the cardiac catheter to test because they did think I had a heart attack. And it was the cardiologist the next day who said, did they tell you what they saw on the chest x-ray in the other hospital? And I'm like, no. So I'm getting ready to have an angiogram, and the cardiologist had to tell me this because if I needed a stent, this would have a bearing on what kind of stent they put in. He said, so he told me there's a mass on your lung, on your left lung. And I'm like, they never told me that. And when I looked at the discharge papers from the hospital, sure enough, it was noted on there, mass on lung, but none of the doctors who spoke to me ever said a word about it. I would think that's malpractice, but you know, what I had other things to deal with at the time. But that's how I found out. And then I just happened to have an appointment set for like the next day with a pulmonologist who is the lung doctor, but that's also the sleep doctor because, you know, I don't sleep. I have restless leg syndrome. And so I went in to see him and I said, I know I came in about restless leg syndrome, but look at this x-ray. And he went, okay, we're scheduling you for a PET scan, a CAT scan, a this, a that. And then it began. And it was a whirlwind after that. And 6 weeks later, I was in the operating room having my lung removed. By the way, in this day and age, do not ever let them like cut open your chest. We went up to the Moffitt Cancer Center at the University of South Florida and met with a surgeon there who was like the head of the department. He seemed great, but he's talking about, so we cut you open. Do the chest spreader, the whole thing. And I'm like, what about the robotic surgery? He said, oh, I don't do that. And I said, well, then I don't do you. So we came back down here. I wound up going to Sylvester Cancer Center at the University of Miami, where they have I forget what it's called. I think it's like the Da Vinci machine or something. It's this robotic surgery that the surgeon that I chose is proficient at. He's done it a million times. And yes, and Durbin, you have my oncologist. He wasn't the surgeon. Raju Mudad is my oncologist. But the surgeon was a doctor. Oh God, I'm drawing a blank on his name. It's a Vietnamese name that I always had trouble saying. but anyway, I had like four little incisions, really small incisions. Now, if you looked at my bare back and side, you'd have to look really closely to see the scars. I know where they are, but some people have the old-fashioned open them up. There's no need for that. I was in enough pain as it was, but just saying, you can have most of a lung removed and without them having to cut you open. it's just four little incisions, and it healed. And here I am 5 years later, not only cancer-free, but cured. So, yay! Let the sunshine through, says good for you, Nicole, switching docs. Look, if anybody, I shared the entire experience in a journal. It's posted, still up there at NicoleSandler.com. If you look on the navigation bar right across the top of the page, there's one tab called Fuck Cancer. I kept a journal of everything. There are scans in there. There's pictures. There's videos. Everything I went through, I shared with you because my life is pretty much lived in the open, has been in the 40 years I've been on the radio. And if I can help one other person who's going through this, I want to. So the information is still there. If you are struggling with this, if you think there's cancer, if you know someone going through this, there's just information there. But, you know, if you are dealing with this and you want someone to talk to, send me an email, call me. You can call me like right after the show ends, or make it, you know, after What's News ends, and I can take your call because I'm here in the studio working for at least a half hour after the show. 954-889-6410. Call that number anytime. And if I hear it, I'll pick it up or leave a message and I'll call you back. I want to help you get through this. If I could get through it, anyone can. And if I can be cured of cancer, so can many other people. So yay, yay. It's a good news day. We'll just put a period at the end of the good news sentence.
Tell me something good.
Good news blown in your window.
It's kind of good.
Good news is knocking on your door.
Good news. You see, and because the rest of the news that I have for you today isn't very good. I mean, what's happening in Afghanistan is just, it's heartbreaking. Seeing those people who just want to get out, you know, and wishing I could help. Obviously, there's nothing I can do. And then hearing, you know, the former guy's idiocy. My goodness. Things are not perfect with Joe Biden. Far from it, actually. But think about where we'd be if that orange menace was still in office. So he issued a statement. You know, he issues these statements and has his press person tweet them out because she's still on Twitter. He's banned. So he puts out these statements by Donald J. Trump, 45th president of the United States of America, which makes me throw up in my mouth a little bit every time I have to say that. Anyway, so here's this tweet. He's criticizing the withdrawal from Afghanistan of the U.S. troops. Keep in mind that he's the one who cut this deal and he negotiated with the Taliban. We'll get to that in a moment. But here's what he wrote. Here's what his statement said. First, you bring out all of the American citizens. Then you bring out all equipment. Then you bomb the bases into smithereens. And then you bring out the military. Anyone sense a little problem here? He continues. He says, you don't do it in reverse order like Biden and our woke generals did. No chaos, no death. They wouldn't even know we left. What? I mean, he never made any sense to begin with. But this, so first you bring out the Americans, says nothing about, you know, the translators, interpreters, the people who worked with us, the Afghan citizens who helped us, who are now in danger. Says nothing about them. First, you bring out the American citizens, then you bring out all equipment, then you bomb the bases into smithereens, and then you bring out the military. Get it? You see the problem? Because if you bomb the bases first, you'd be blowing up our soldiers. The military. That's who you'd be blowing up if you bomb the bases into smithereens. My God, the man is just a fucking moron. But that didn't stop some guy today from driving his pickup truck that appeared to have pretty bald tires. Apparently, the man is from North Carolina. Onto the grounds of the Capitol, he was near the Library of Congress. when I don't know how the threat came out, but there was a bomb scare. Capitol Hill was under a bomb threat all morning, and this idiot, this Trumper, was live streaming on Facebook for 4 hours. He was streaming on Facebook for 4 hours before they cut his feed. You want to know what he was saying? Oh, it's lovely. Here, let me, it was taken down. His account was killed, but not before some enterprising people, took video shots and posted them online. So here's a little bit of this guy, and I'm not going to say his name, and I don't know his name. I honestly don't remember his name. But this is him. Here's a little bit of the crap he was spewing for 4 hours today. Come on.
It's on you, Joe.
What?
I'm ready to die for the cause.
I'm ready to die for the cause. Yeah.
And brother, you said if you could do anything to save one life, you said you'd do it.
He's talking to Joe Biden, by the way.
I want to go home Sunday.
I want to go home.
I want to go home and see my wife.
Yeah.
We're living in a free country, Joe.
We're living in a free country, Joe.
Choice is yours.
Choice is yours.
If you want to shoot me and take the chance of blowing up 2.5 city blocks.
2.5 city blocks.
Because that toolbox is full. Ammonium nitrate is full.
The toolbox is full of ammonium nitrate. So if you shoot the car, you're going to blow up.
Joe. I want to go home.
Okay, then why are you there?
Just like the people in Afghanistan want to go home.
Oh, really?
Them people's lives are on your hands. All them dead people's on your hands. Afghanistan, I'm standing for you strong, too. The motherfuckers should have bombed our asses and made sure you was all right before you left.
Oh, my God. Okay, so that's this miscreant. That's this piece of human excrement who... basically paralyzed Washington, D.C. today. And by the way, when that was going on, Times Square in New York City was locked down for a while because of a suspicious vehicle or something. The world has gone mad. Now, the guy was then, just after a five-hour standoff, 4 hours streaming live on Facebook before they cut the feed, after 5 hours, he surrendered. Big, tough-talking guy. I want to go home. You're going to blow up 2.5 blocks. Yeah. So apparently he emerged from his vehicle, surrendered to police. They took him in without incident. The latest I read was they don't know if there are any explosives there or not. He, in another part of the video, he threatened that there were 5 other people from the South all around D.C., apparently, there's no evidence that he was working with anyone else. Just there. That's it. Oh, I know you think that it was the intrepid work of the Capitol Police, because it is them. They're the ones who finally took him in. What you don't know, there is some hidden video of the former guy negotiating with him. I don't think any of the news organizations actually have it yet, but go figure. We got a hold of it. What you got here?
Hello, yes. Is this Ray Roseberry? What a name. What a name. Very American. This is your president, and I think you know what that means. Not Sleepy Joe. They contacted your president and said, "Sir, we know you wrote The Art of the Deal, possibly the greatest book about negotiations ever written. Could you please come in and help this situation? We have a strong patriot.
A strong patriot.
Who maybe has a little too much love." And I said, "I'll do it because you called me, sir." So, Ray, you know, I understand. You seem upset. And excuse me, I'm talking. You seem upset. And that's, you know, our country is disappearing. I understand. I understand it even better than you. No, Ray. Shut up. I know it better than you. Okay?
Okay.
A lot better than you, by the way.
Okay.
But I know you're out, you know, peacefully suicide bombing, And you know the left and the radical fake news, they're going to say, "Oh, he was a terrorist. He was a white nationalist.
He was white."
No, I understand what you're doing. It's called peaceful protest in the form of possible detonation of a few blocks. It's called peaceful. And I know you're by the Library of Congress, and I don't care. You think I like library books? Are one of the dumbest things we've ever had. Books, they're like, except for The Art of the Deal. Books are like movies, but without, you know, nudity and pictures and sort of fun stuff. So I don't, you know, I could care less what you do to the Library of Congress. And I don't even like Congress, by the way. I think you know that too. They're so disgraceful, what they did to your president. You know, you've got the radical left also the rhinos. So I don't like libraries and I don't like Congress. But what I need you to do is... you know, consider maybe not doing this right now. You know, maybe wait possibly for the midterm elections if those don't go well, or, you know, in 2024 when I run again, although that's between us because of the, you know, FEC filing. But you're too stupid to understand that. So just, you know, pee in your water bottle or whatever, have a few more Mountain Dews, and then get the hell out of there, okay? And we'll see what happens.
Okay. I guess he's good for something. I don't know. Sorry. JL Coven, who never lets an opportunity go by to jump online and make fun of the infidels, the idiots. I think the tweet of the day today goes to Mel Brooks. Not Mel Brooks. Mel... I wish it was Mel Brooks. What's his name? Mo Brooks. Woo! Boy, talk about a brain fart. Now, Mel Brooks in Congress, that would be fun to watch. Mo Brooks will make you rip your hair out. Mo Brooks tweeted, "I'm aware of the Capitol bomb threat." Somebody's here. Sorry. That's why Jackson's, and I don't know who's there. "I'm aware of the Capitol bomb threat. I'm monitoring the situation. I am in Alabama. My Washington staff is accounted for and safe. I pray for the safety of Capitol Police and first responders on the scene in Washington. Sadly, violence and threats of violence targeting America's political institutions are far too common. Although this terrorist motivation is not yet publicly known, and generally speaking, I understand citizenry anger directed..." Here's where it gets weird. That's why I'm having trouble reading it, because I can't believe I'm reading these words. "I understand citizenry anger directed at dictatorial socialism and its threat to liberty, freedom, and the very fabric of American society." What? "The way to stop socialism's march is for patriotic Americans to fight back in the 2022 and 2024 elections. I strongly encourage patriotic Americans to do exactly that, more so than ever before. Bluntly stated, America's future is at risk." Hey, Mo Brooks, I got a little song for you.
"I just need you to shut the fuck up, 'cause nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch.
Everybody
now,
sing.
Now, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up.
Bow, bow. Yeah. So there you go. Mo Brooks. By the way, oh my goodness. It was a busy day in the Senate today. You know, Congress is on recess. The House is coming back on Monday, I believe Monday, on the 23rd, to vote on the budget resolution so that they can go ahead and write the $3.5 trillion other infrastructure bill, right? You know that there's 9 so-called centrist moderate Democrats are nothing. They're not moderate. They're conservatives, or as Howie Klein refers to them, from the Republican wing of the Democratic Party, that are holding it up, that are threatening to throw a wrench in the whole thing and blow it all up. We'll talk to Howie about that in a few minutes. But no, none of the Senate is out. The House is out. But today's been an interesting day in the Senate because, well, first we learned that, who was the first one? Roger Wicker, senator from Mississippi, 70 years old, fully vaccinated, tested positive for COVID. What a shame. Few hours later, Angus King, independent from Maine who caucuses with the Democrats, fully vaccinated, tested positive for COVID. And just moments ago, what crossed my desktop? Yet a third U.S. senator today tested positive for COVID. That would be John Frackenlooper. I'm sorry, Hickenlooper from Colorado. So you got a Democrat, you got a Republican, you got an independent. Everybody's represented here. They are all COVID positive. This is scary. By the way, when we spoke to the oncologist today, David asked, you know, am I more at risk because I only have one lung than someone who has two lungs? He said, I'm not more at risk for catching COVID. I have the same chances of catching it as everyone else. What I am more at risk of is if I get pneumonia, getting sicker. So all the more reason for me to be diligent and safe, which I am, because I'm back into quarantine. I don't leave the house unless it's absolutely necessary. And when I do, I wear a mask. And he even said, if I'm like seeing my kid, because she's around people who may or may not be vaccinated, that I should wear a mask. This is, there's you know, no messing around here. It's that serious. You know, some people get it and some don't. I want to play for you a short video, audio, if you're listening just to the podcast or one of the audio streams, from a father in Tennessee. I don't know if this was a school board meeting or like a town hall meeting or something, but it's school board meeting. It was the Williamson County Board of Education meeting in Tennessee. Now, this gives me some hope for the South because I felt very confident about the Southern states. But knowing that this man exists gives me a little more hope. All right, so this is, again, Williamson County Board of Education meeting, and this man's name is Justin Canow, and he's a dad.
Justin Canow, I'm a dad in Williamson County. Didn't plan on speaking, but here we go.
Glad you are.
First of all, critical race theory is not in our schools, and it never was.
There you go.
And the people here to complain about it did not know what it was 6 months ago and had never heard of it.
Hello.
That's why they're going after diversity, equity, and inclusion instead and trying to pretend they're the same thing. They aren't. And frankly, there aren't many communities around the globe that need DEI more than this one that we live in. On another note, I'm a dad of a new kindergartner, and her first day was right after the chaos last week. She went to school and was one of just a few kids in her class wearing a mask, which made her ask me why she had to. My answer was because we want to take care of other people.
Hello.
She's 5 years old, but she understood that concept. And it's disappointing that more adults around here can't seem to grasp it. I asked a pastor friend of mine, and he was very clear there's no actual biblical justification for using the Bible to get out of a mask mandate passed by a majority of this elected board. But thousands are doing it anyway, calling it a religious exemption, which is frankly just sad. Avoiding masks is not in the Bible, but taking care of others is.
Good
and now
him.
Today we have Governor Lee's executive order to allow opt-outs, which is government overreach undercutting a local decision. If you only like democracy when it goes your way, you don't actually like democracy. Thank you.
Wow.
Our next speaker,
that
Sally Berg.
He deserves a standing ovation. That was awesome. We need more of that. And good for him. Justin Canow was his name. That warmed my heart. We need to hear more like that. All right. Well, it looks to be about that time. Who's out there? Who's mixing up the Dirty Debbies? Is it you? Is it your turn? Well, get on it, because I got to get Howie on the phone. And, you know, we can get quite thirsty when Howie Klein is here. All right. Hit it.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Hello, Howie Klein.
Hello, Nicole Sandler.
How are you doing today?
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you very much. Yes, it's a big, exciting day.
Have you talked about it on the air yet?
Of course, I opened with good news. Look, in these days when good news is so rare to come by, I sang it from the rooftops.
All right.
Yeah. So
my good news today is a little different. I'm making a Moroccan carrot salad, and it's coming out really well.
Moroccan carrot salad. Okay.
Yeah, Moroccans like their carrot salad, and I've been there a dozen times and learned how to make it.
Let me ask you this, because you are, Howie Klein, is the most traveled person I know. You spent a good amount of time in Afghanistan back many years ago, right?
Yes, twice, as a matter of fact. Once in 1969 on the way to India, and then 2 years later on the way back from India.
Wow. And so when you hear this news of, you know, what's going on there now, I mean, is it so far removed that it's not even the same Afghanistan you knew, or does it make you feel bad? How does it affect you?
Well, it's a lot of different questions, but
I know.
Afghanistan doesn't change much. When I got there, I felt like I was in biblical times. So maybe it's changed a little bit since then, but I don't think so. And it makes me feel very bad. I'm not in touch with any of the people who I knew when I was there, including families that I lived with. And, you know, most Americans who go, not counting the military, that's a separate situation, but most Americans who went to Afghanistan just really went to Kabul.
Mm-hmm.
They may have passed through Herat and Kandahar. Maybe they went up to Mazar to get some hash, but most Americans just spent all their time in Afghanistan, however much it was, in Kabul, the capital city.
Right.
I didn't. I went all over the country. I had a Volkswagen van, and I drove everywhere that could be driven, and where I couldn't be driven, I got a horse, and I went riding into places unknown, like especially in the Hindu Kush, where in those days there were no roads. Now, you ask if it's the same.
Yeah.
In some ways, it's less the same. I think it was 1956 or 58, the U.S. built a road, a really nice paved highway, from Herat, which is basically on the Iranian, near the Iranian border. So from Herat down south into Kandahar, and then slowly turning north to Kabul. So that was half the country, a little more than half the country, kind of along the border, like think of a circle. And it was the bottom half of the circle. The Russians built a road on the top half of the circle from Herat up to Mazar and then down into Kandahar. I'm sorry, not into Kandahar, down into Kabul. So that completed the circle of a highway. That was the only paved road in the country. I mean, obviously there were some paved roads in Kabul, but there were no paved roads. And in fact, it was interesting. There was a traffic light in Kabul. It was just one at the time. And it was advisory. You didn't have to actually stop for the traffic light.
Okay.
But you say, is it the same? And you know what? It's actually less the same, because that beautiful highway that I talked about, that I drove every inch of, it doesn't exist anymore. It's been devastated. There was one kind of, I would say, fancy hotel. Now, I was very poor at the time, so I wasn't staying in any fancy hotels. But these two Canadians who I had met had a big score. I don't remember which drug it was. So they were loaded with money from the score, and they checked into this one fancy hotel. I think it was called the Intercontinental on the outskirts of Kabul, and that was the only thing that we would think of as a hotel. There were other everything else was a flop house basically.
What year was this?
This was 69.
Okay. Wow.
Well, since then, the Intercontinental on the outskirts, now it may have been built up since then several times, but it was being used by the Taliban as mortar target practice. So.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Wow. Yeah. I mean, obviously, it would be expected that things would change. I don't, 65, I was, or 69, I was very young. Interesting, sort of a split screen, if you will, split screen thought. 69, you're in Afghanistan doing that. 69, also just this week, was Woodstock. And Melanie came on the show on Tuesday.
Wow.
Yeah. A listener is an old friend of hers and put us in touch. And she's amazing. She's like 74 years old, living in Nashville. And she's still performing. She's still singing and writing songs. Just very unaffected, just a lovely woman. I had the best conversation with her.
Oh, great. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, I missed Woodstock. I was already over Europe when it happened. But Woodstock basically happened in England as well. It wasn't exactly the same, but the Isle of Wight Festival was in England.
All right.
And I went to that.
Uh-huh.
Hendrix played.
Right.
And
is Bob that Dylan when you met Hendrix?
And, you know, it was very much like Woodstock.
Is that when you met Hendrix?
No, I met Hendrix many years before that.
Oh.
In fact, I was in Morocco with Hendrix right before we went to the Isle of Wight. We didn't go to the Isle of Wight together. I was driving my van. He flew from Casa, but I met him when he was, first of all, he wasn't even Hendrix when I met him. He was Jimmy James at the time.
Wow.
And he was he had a band. Damn, I can't remember the name of it, but it was a backup band for many artists. But I met him when he was playing as a backup band with John Hammond Jr.
Nice.
And he was great. He was amazing. I walked up to him and asked him if he would come play at my school.
And he did.
He said, and he pointed to these guys across the room, and he said, "See those guys? That's the Animals. And I'm going with them to England tomorrow." And he did. And then he became the Jimi Hendrix Experience. And when he came back to the U.S., he did come play at my school. And it was his first show in America. And it was fantastic. I had met him one time before that. But it was kind of a bad time in his life. And he was hawking, I guess you could say. Not hawking.
Pawning?
Pawning his guitar to a guy named Brad Pierce, who we both knew. And Brad was the, I don't know if he was the owner, but he was the manager of a really good club called Salvation. And, you know, I went to see him. It was in the middle of the afternoon, and Hendrix was down there too. So that was the first time I met Hendrix.
Wow. It's incredible. I mean, you know, I had asked you once on the air, Howie, if you had ever thought about ever writing a book, and you're like, nah, not going to do that. But you sent me something today. Someone else is writing the book, wrote the book, Disturbing the Peace, 415 Records and the Rise of New Wave. And I guess what's the story on this? It's coming out soon?
Right, but that's not my story. That's 415 Record story. So if I was going to, and I kind of hope I do, if I was going to write an autobiography or help someone write a biography, 415 Records would be a chapter or two.
Right.
In the book. But this guy's written the whole book about it. It's coming out in October.
Wow.
And the thing I sent you, I also posted on my Facebook page.
Okay.
The Howie Klein Facebook page,
right.
Not the Down with Tyranny Facebook page.
Gotcha.
And, I don't know the guy. He interviewed me for a magazine article. And during the interview, he said, you know what? I can make a book out of this.
Oh, my.
But as it turned out, he interviewed, I think he told me, 96 people in all for this book. And, including band members and other people who worked at 415 and people who were just part of the scene. I don't really know much more about it than the stuff that I did as an interview and,
right?
And what you read today on that thing.
This looks great. I'll link to your Facebook page and the piece so people on the blog where I post today's show so people can see it. It looks fascinating, and your name is all over his little chapter description. So obviously 415 Records was your baby.
Right. Well, I had Well, I had a couple of partners in that. One of them was Chris Knob, and he's also featured quite a bit in the book. And I'm not sure if the other ones are as well. One was a silent partner. Well, they were both kind of silent partner. One was, you know, a guy who was a little bit involved with it in the very beginning. He lent us 25 grand. We didn't have any money at all. That was the only money at all. And for that 25 grand, he owned a third of the company. He wasn't his kind of music. He was more like into the Allman Brothers. Huh. And 415 was a kind of a punk label.
Yeah, right.
So he sold his shares back to us, kind of, and or to Queenie Taylor, really. And Queenie was someone who was a very good friend of mine. She worked for Bill Graham, and she also was kind of a silent partner. Chris and I ran the thing, and so I think he probably interviewed them too. I'm just not sure. I don't know.
I guess we'll find out.
List of names of people who worked there. Some I know he interviewed. Some I'm not sure if he did or he didn't. And he reached out to lots and lots of band members, including people who I hadn't spoken to in decades.
Wow.
In many decades.
You know, there are so many memories. And obviously, for those who don't know, who are new to the show, and they only know you, Howie Klein, as, you know, the guy behind the Blue America Pack who blogs at downwithtyranny.com. When we met decades ago, when I was doing music radio in L.A., you were the president of Reprise Records. You came down from San Francisco. You went from 415 to Sire Records, and then you moved down to take over Reprise?
Yeah, well, both Sire and Reprise
are
part of Warner Brothers.
Right.
So you know, it's really one company, but, you know, different labels inside of that one company. So I was hired to be the general manager of Sire. That went well. And then when they decided to resuscitate a Reprise, which had sort of been, had lapsed, they asked me if I wanted to be president. And I did. I had a good life. It changed my life amazingly.
It did, obviously. Yes, and so that's a whole other side to Howie Klein, which we veer into from time to time because we do have the music in common. So here we are. While we're talking, I want to veer away from music for a moment into politics, because the House on recess now is coming back, I think, Monday. The 23rd Monday?
Yes, it is. And for one day.
For one day to vote on the budget resolution, which will allow then the Senate or the committee to start writing the bill for the $3.5 trillion infrastructure bill that goes hand in hand with the one that they just passed. And there's a group of people who are being described as moderate or centrist Democrats who are basically threatening to derail the whole thing, and led by this guy, Josh Gottheimer. What's
Josh
happening
Gottheimer,
with this?
A blue dog from New Jersey, a very corrupt Wall Street guy. He's from Bergen County. His district is the 5th district of New Jersey, which is, and Bergen County is most of the district. I think it's like, you know, 3/4 of the people who vote in that district live in Bergen County. And Bergen County is the it's like the bedroom community of Wall Street.
Right.
You know, most people, you know, I mean, fabulously rich people might live in Manhattan, but, you know, someone who's just moderately rich, like just like a plain millionaire, say, they live in Bergen County.
Right.
And he's their guy. He's, from the moment he got into Congress, he's been the Wall Street guy. He got Pelosi to put him on the House Financial Services Committee, where he services the financial industry. He's not a watchdog. He's the opposite of a watchdog. He's
a dog.
Well, he's a crook. It's basically what he
he's
is.
He's just a dog.
And he's so he's not interested in this soft infrastructure bill. He thinks it's going to be too expensive. He doesn't want to see all this money spent on the working class. That's not what he's about. He's about protecting the interests of the very wealthy. I mean, he's in every way, except for some social issues, he's a Republican.
Right.
He's a Clinton guy. He worked for Clinton. He was a big Hillary supporter, and that's really what he is and where he's at. And we're unfortunately stuck with him. Although, from what I'm hearing, is Pelosi is so furious at him now that God only knows what's going to happen. So he and his 8 compatriots, 7 blue dogs and 1 new Dem, are all on her shit list, And from what I'm hearing is that she's already got approached enough of them to get them on her, get them away from him.
Right. Yeah. You wrote something about that, that she probably doesn't, he doesn't have his, you know, his troops in order, because there are people on that list who are not necessarily as blue doggish as he is. One of them, I think, is her main priority is like Medicare for all. It seems like that it's a very loose coalition. The problem is that Nancy Pelosi, the Democrats, only have a 3-vote majority in the House now. They can't afford to lose any votes.
Well, they can afford to lose three.
Three.
They
right.
can afford. You know, they can afford
three.
That. And she'll do that. I mean, from what I hear, she's already cut a deal with Jared Golden that's going to give
Whoa.
Him the opportunity to vote against it.
Oh, really?
He feels that he has to do that for his district. He's wrong.
Right.
But she's going to let him do that. But and the reason she's going to is because she's got the votes. It'll pass by one vote.
Wow. Wow.
The other possibility, I mean, it's interesting because the other bill, see, McCarthy is whipping against this thing in a big way.
Right.
But the other bill is chock full of Republican, what is that called? Oh, God, I can't believe it's on
Pork.
The tip of my tongue.
Pork.
You know, when someone in Congress want something for their district.
Earmarks. Right.
Yes, it's chock full of Republican earmarks. So there are quite a few Republicans that really, really want it to pass because, you know, it's got like, you know, the bridge in their biggest town is collapsing and they, you know, they want to fix it. So it looks like it will have at least that part of the package. And remember, Pelosi wants this to be a package just of one basic thing that all passes at the same time.
Right.
So there will be Republicans who are going to vote for that. And it's driving McCarthy insane because he doesn't care about anything except defeating the Democrats in November of 2022. That's all he cares about because that would probably make him speaker, although not definitely, but probably. If the Democrats lose, the Republicans will have the majority, and they'll pick the speaker. He assumes it'll be him, but there are quite a few Republicans who don't like that idea. So
right.
Who knows?
All right. So everything's up in the air. So they come back Monday only for the vote.
Yeah.
Now, are they? They're still allowed to proxy vote, though, aren't they? This could go on all day because some of the people aren't going to show up.
They are still allowed to proxy vote. Yes.
Which
and you're right. Some of them won't show up.
Right.
You know, especially now that there's COVID in Congress again.
Three senators
of
today.
Senate today
three.
Reported. One yesterday and two today reported that they have COVID.
Yeah.
They can't vote at all because the Senate, I believe, the Senate does not have
they
proxy
do not.
Voting.
They do not have proxy voting in the Senate. So yeah, this is they're on recess now, and I don't think there are any votes scheduled there for a while. They're not supposed to come back till mid-September. But
yeah.
The fact is, that's Angus King, John Frackenlooper, and the guy from Tennessee, Roger Wicker from Mississippi. That's big, and all three of them were vaccinated. This just tells you how contagious this strain of the virus is and that we all need to be diligent again. And yet we have these idiot governors. I've got one right here who are,
yep.
You know, saying you can't wear a mask. Now, school started yesterday.
Well, not exactly that you can't wear a mask.
No, you can't mandate masks.
What they're saying is that if a school district tries to enforce mask wearing, like in other words, if the school district says, if you want to come to this school, you have to wear a mask.
Right.
Or there are some alternatives. In Florida, some of the school districts have interesting alternatives. But he says that's illegal and that he will cut off the salaries of any school superintendents who try that. I think he backed away from that.
Yeah, because he admitted that he has no control over their salaries.
And various other states are following his lead. He's like the leader of the pack. But Abbott in Texas, for example,
who was also
today,
COVID positive,
Doug Ducey,
oh,
who's a real douchebag
in Arizona.
Arizona, he came up with something else that's really insane, which is they're going to offer incentives to people to not wear masks.
Why?
They're out of their minds. I guess Ducey is trying to get back on Trump's good side. But these people are insane. They're crazy. I mean, it's almost as if they're trying to kill Americans.
Yeah.
You know, I did a little correlation. I keep doing it, but I did another one today. I think it's coming out tonight. Yeah. So I took the every county in Texas where Trump got 90% or better.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2020.
Right.
Just think of it, a whole county and Trump gets 90% or in one case, 96% of the vote. Can you imagine 96% of people voting for Trump? And the correlation was with vaccinations. And it was so pure. The more Trump voters in a county, the fewer people who get vaccinated.
I just don't understand people.
Would that surprise you, though?
No, not at all. Not at all, because I see it. I'm seeing it everywhere. It's insane. These people are nuts. And, you know, I had the consult with my oncologist today, and that's one question we asked him specifically. Am I more open to getting sick? And I'm not. I have the same chance of catching COVID as anyone else, but if I get infected, I will probably get a worse infection because I've only got one lung. What he said to do is wear a mask. And I mentioned my daughter. My daughter works around people. So she wears a mask at work and she's vaccinated, but she's around people who may not be. He said, wear a mask. Whenever you're indoors and you're around other people, wear a mask, unless you're home and it's your family that you live with. He's an oncologist. He's a really good doctor. I doubt he'd be telling me to wear a mask if it didn't serve any purpose.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm very close with my doctor, mm-hmm. also an oncologist.
Right. Yep.
And she's a researcher. She rather than a, you know, she's not a family doctor.
Right.
She does research. And, you know, I said to her as this thing was breaking, I said, just tell me what to do and just base it on what you and your family are doing.
Yeah.
And that's what I've done. And 2 months ago, she told me to get my third vaccine, and I got my third vaccine.
You were able to get it because you are immunocompromised. I mean,
I was able to get it because I cheated. I mean, I can't remember the exact figure. It was either 1.1 million or 1.3 million Americans have already cheated and gotten their third vaccine.
Oh, my.
Which you're not supposed to get, you're not supposed to get it till September.
Right.
For medical reasons, you can get it anytime.
Oh.
They're saying you don't get it till September because they're trying to build up
the
stock.
Yeah,
so there's not some kind of a mad rush. And then the other thing, the WHO is telling people not to get it. Again, not for medical reasons. They're telling people not to get it because they say, you know, why should America have a third vaccine when all these other countries, these poor countries around the world, don't even have one vaccine?
Right, right.
So they want the vaccines to go to poor countries.
Right, but
I
get that too.
I agree with it.
And we are sending millions of doses around the globe. I mean, I think the United States is probably doing more.
Enough.
It's never enough. It's
of
never
course.
Enough.
We have how many people live on the globe now?
I don't even know.
I mean, it's billions, but
it
I can't
billions.
Remember how many. When I was a kid, it was 2 billion, but
right.
I think it's 6 billion now.
I think so. And yes, we can send 100 million doses, and it's still not nearly enough. But, you know, I can argue either side of the argument. Frankly, when it's available to me, I will get that third shot, without a doubt. But, you know, I talk to people like my sister, who fought against it, and she told me her daughter just got the shot 2 weeks ago. I'm like, why? What did she wait so long for? And my sister says, well, I'm iffy about it. If I'm iffy about it, I'm not going to tell her to do it. What are you iffy about? You're a school teacher. Do you know more than the scientists and the doctors? I mean, how did people all of a sudden become experts on vaccinations and immunotherapy and things like that? I don't you trust the experts. I wouldn't let anybody but a surgeon operate on me. I'm not going to let anybody but a doctor and a scientist tell me, you know, what to do with a vaccine.
I don't get it. I mean, and is your sister, I'm going to guess your sister's not a Trumper. You would have said so.
She's not a Trumper. that she's not a Trumper, but she's, I don't know what she is. She's nuts. And so I just got a text from her. My niece tested positive. Now she only had a mild, she didn't have any fever. She had like mild flu-like symptoms. And it was 2 weeks after she got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. But come on. And then my sister says, but I don't have to quarantine because I've already been vaccinated. It just shows how uninformed people are, because yes, she does, because she can still spread it to other people.
Yeah. Did you tell her?
I just read that message. It popped up on my screen while we were talking. You better believe that when we're done, I will send her a note, because yes, you do have to quarantine. If you're living in the house with someone who tested positive, one, you get tested, two, you stay home.
Yep.
I don't understand. And then there's somebody in the chat room, in one of the chats, who said, no jab for me. And I said, why not? He said, why would I put poison to me? It's not poison. It's a fucking vaccine. Did you get the polio vaccination? It's not poison. Oh, my God. The stupidity is just, it kills me. Or it could.
I know.
It could.
Hopefully it won't.
I know. Hey, by the way, since I'm in the chat room, somebody else, Sandy Sandstones, asked, could you please ask Howie about Han Huynh? Do you know Han Huynh? Progressive Democratic candidate from Chicago District 5?
And Han, how do you spell Han?
It's H-O-A-N, last name H-U-Y-N-H. The website is Han for Congress.com.
And that's a Democratic. I think that's I don't know the candidate,
okay.
But I think that seat, if I remember correctly, is held by a conservative-ish Democrat.
Uh-huh.
I mean, not someone on the level of Gottheimer,
right?
But, like a kind of a corporate stooge, anyway, named Quigley. I think that's the district. It's Rahm Emanuel's old district.
Oh no.
Yeah.
But, okay.
Yeah. But and I from what I'm hearing,
yep,
is that
it is
there
Mike
are
Quigley.
More than one progressive who are at least at one time thinking about running for that seat against Quigley. It's very, very hard for these candidates when they're running against someone who's pretty bad. Yeah, that's it. The fifth is definitely Quigley.
Yep. Yeah, it is Quigley. I just looked it up.
So You need two things to in a primary. You need the incumbent to be a real villain, and you have to make sure that you tell the voters that, and the voters understand that he or she is a villain. And then you need to paint yourself as a hero. Everybody likes to paint themselves as a hero, but it's very, very hard to paint someone as a villain. Now, Gottheimer was not hard to paint as a villain because he's a real villain.
Yeah.
There's tons of things that he does that are bad. So you can do that. And the woman who ran against him last time still lost. AOC was able to paint Crowley as a villain, and he was a real villain.
Right.
And the ones who win are usually the ones who can paint the incumbent as a villain. Cori Bush, it took her two cycles, but she did it. Donna Edwards, it took her two cycles, but she was able to do it in the
Marie
end.
Newman. Marie Newman. Right? Marie Newman?
Yeah, he did it too. I mean, his whole district was covered with stuff about fracking.
Right.
Connecting the Democratic Blue Dog incumbent with fracking. And that's why Cartwright won.
Right. And Marie Newman beat Dan Lipinski, I don't know, in the same way. Right?
Same thing. Yep. Blue Dog, a villain. Took her two cycles to do it. She,
yeah.
She didn't manage in the first. She got it. She got him in the second. So it's very, very hard for these incumbents, and I feel badly for them. And I feel especially badly when there's more than one progressive who jumps in, and then they're fighting with each other,
right.
Or people get confused and they don't know what to do. If someone's going to take out an incumbent, it's got to be really, really clear. There's got to be. This is a bad person.
Yep.
This is the reason why he's a bad incumbent for us. And now we have to elect this person instead.
Well, it's like the race in for the Senate seat held by Ron Johnson in Wisconsin. Chris Larson was running, but then the lieutenant governor jumped in, who's better known. And Chris Larson backed out, and I'm guessing it's because he wants to get rid of Ron Johnson, and the best way to do that is to coalesce around one candidate and not split the vote.
That's definitely part of why he decided to jump out, but he also decided to jump out because he wasn't able to raise money because there, you know, there are all these candidates loaded with money, and he was not. And once Mandela Barnes jumped in, the lieutenant governor, the progressive organization started endorsing him, and Chris felt this is going to be a waste of time.
Gotcha.
And he got out of it, and he endorsed Mandela.
Good.
And he's campaigning for him as well.
And that's how you win, when we work together to defeat the bad guys. That's what we need to do. And we need to get in gear on that now. Howie Klein, we've reached the end of the hour. It always flies by so fast. Thank you. And we'll talk next week.
All right.
All right.
Talk to you next week.
Thanks, Howie.
Bye.
Bye. All right, you guys, we're done. Tomorrow, we're going to deal with Afghanistan and the voting issues, all these laws that are being introduced and passed in states around the country, and what we must do to stop that from happening. Plus, I'll be in for Brad Friedman tomorrow as well, so it's going to be a busy Friday. And tonight I'm going to celebrate. Thank you for listening. Thanks for hanging, everyone. I will leave you with the news, and I'll see you tomorrow. All right. Bye.
I read the news today.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Countries around the world are trying to evacuate their citizens from Afghanistan. Many are considering how to accommodate an influx of Afghan refugees fleeing Taliban rule. Desperate Afghans and their families are still crowding the airport in Kabul as the Taliban violently tries to keep them out. 12 people have been killed there in the chaos following the city's fall to the Taliban. Those trying desperately to leave fear what life would be like under renewed Taliban rule. Though they've tried to present an image that's more progressive and restrained than before, the Taliban repressed millions during its rule from 1996 to 2001, and violent punishments were common. And sure enough, any thoughts about the Taliban moderating their radical practices appear to be unfounded. A high-ranking Taliban commander, Wahidullah Hashimi, confirmed Wednesday that they haven't changed at all, saying, quote, "There will be no democratic system at all because it does not have any base in our country." And he added that the country would be run under Sharia law. Meanwhile, the U.S. is conducting talks with the Taliban to try to ensure safe passage for Americans and others trying to get to the airport in Kabul to leave. It doesn't seem to be working. So we've heard a lot about the thousands of Afghans, interpreters, and other allies who helped the United States who need to get out. Well, there's another group of people trapped inside, journalists. And on Wednesday, Senators Amy Klobuchar and Mitt Romney sent a letter to Anthony Blinken, Secretary of State, Alejandro Mayorkas, Secretary of Homeland Security, and Lloyd Austin, Secretary of Defense, imploring our government to protect and evacuate journalists, saying the U.S. should honor its commitment to a free press by taking measures to ensure the safety of journalists, supporting staff, and their families in Afghanistan. They added, quote, "Those who contributed to a free and open press in Afghanistan will likely face retribution by the Taliban and must be brought to safety." Moving on to COVID news. Not good. COVID-19 hospitalization rates in the U.S. have now hit record highs for all age groups under 50. The most affected, people from 30 to 39 and children under 18. Hospitalizations for both of those groups are 30% above their previous peak, according to data from the CDC. The Biden administration on Wednesday announced that COVID-19 vaccine booster shots will be offered to eligible Americans beginning September 20th. Now, these apply to the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines. Those who got the single-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine will also likely need another dose, but that's still being researched. Now, when the president announced the decision for the third dose, he also took a moment to address the Republican governors who are not only spreading disinformation, but helping to spread the virus, banning efforts to protect students by banning their schools from instituting mask mandates.
I'm directing the Secretary of Education to take additional steps to protect our children. This includes using all of his oversight authorities and legal action, if appropriate, against governors who are trying to block and intimidate local school officials and educators. And as I said before, if you aren't going to fight COVID-19, at least get out of the way of everyone else who's trying. We're not going to sit by as governors try to block and intimidate educators protecting our children. For example, if a governor wants to cut the pay of a hardworking education leader who requires masks in a classroom, the money from the American Rescue Plan can be used to pay that person's salary, 100%.
Well, on Wednesday, the Secretary of Education, Miguel Cardoza, said that the administration will use the Education Department's Civil Rights Enforcement Authority to prevent states from banning mask mandates in public schools. Obviously, this will escalate the administration's clash with Republican-led states, including Texas and Florida, that have ordered school districts and other local jurisdictions not to require face coverings to curb the spread of the virus, even in areas where the Delta variant is rampant. Just amazing. And then there's climate. Hurricane Grace is expected to hit Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula Thursday morning, this after sweeping through the Caribbean as a tropical storm. It'll bring dangerous winds, rain, and storm surges, and is expected to strengthen as it moves past the area on Friday. Then it could threaten Mexico's mainland as a Category 1 storm. Then there's Fred, still battering the eastern U.S. with rain after being downgraded to a post-tropical cyclone. 35 people are missing in North Carolina after the system brought severe flooding. And there's Tropical Storm Henri, which could make landfall in the northeast U.S. this weekend. And Haiti. Hospitals in Haiti are completely overwhelmed by patients after Saturday's 7.2 magnitude earthquake and one of these storms sweeping through the island in the aftermath. At least 2,189 people have already been confirmed dead, and those numbers will continue rising. At least 75,000 homes have been confirmed damaged or destroyed, and dozens of people are waiting for treatment at the main hospital, and there's no relief in sight. And finally, I can end on a positive note. The governor of Utah proves that at least one decent Republican remains. Governor Spencer J. Cox of Utah sent a letter to President Joe Biden on Tuesday that reads, quote, "Dear President Biden, I'm deeply saddened by the human tragedy currently unfolding in Afghanistan. I recognize Utah plays no direct role in shaping U.S. diplomatic or military policy, but we have a long history of welcoming refugees from around the world and helping them restart their lives in a new country. We are eager to continue that practice and assist with the resettlement of individuals and families fleeing Afghanistan, especially those who valiantly helped U.S. troops, diplomats, journalists, and other civilians over the past 20 years. As you may already know, Utah's history guides our approach to refugees. Our state was settled by refugees fleeing religious persecution 170 years ago. Their descendants have a deep understanding of the danger and pain caused by forced migration and an appreciation for the wonderful contributions of refugees in our communities. Please advise us in the coming days and weeks how we can assist. Sincerely, Spencer J. Cox, Governor of Utah." Now that's refreshing. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is completely listener-supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com.